Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. On Tuesday, February 5th, Donald Trump delivered his second State of the Union address. In usual Trump fashion, he used the occasion to repeat his anti-immigrant racist talking points, pressing the need for border security. He also bashed what he called failing socialist economic policies, taking aim at Venezuela and the government of democratically elected President Nicolas Maduro, while also targeting Iran as a so-called state sponsor of terrorism. On the domestic front, he used the State of the Union to brag about improvements to the economy, claiming that millions of new jobs have been created and that wages have increased. But he made no mention of poverty, of the 140 million people living in the United States who are either impoverished or close to the poverty line. He also talked about implementing new restrictions on women's right to choose on late-term abortions. Others, however, felt that Trump didn't address real issues that people across the U.S. face. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, for example, said Trump didn't speak enough about the gun violence epidemic plaguing the country. Let's hear now what Nancy Pelosi had to say.
Well, you know what, the overwhelming reaction that I'm receiving is that the president talked about security in so many different ways, and he totally ignored the gun violence epidemic in our country. And a large number of our members had families that had been victims of gun violence, including I had several myself, and they were just so saddened by the fact that he made no pass at it, no acknowledgement of it, while representing that he was talking about keeping the American people safe.
Did you hear anything that you liked?
I liked when he acknowledged that it was the largest number of women. He forgot to acknowledge that there were only 15 Republicans and 91 Democratic women in the Congress of the United States. But it seemed on the House side and in the House of Representatives. So it was like weird. You're bringing this up. And look, and I love the way the women just rose to the occasion. Yeah, that's
great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And that was Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. Today, we hear the trouble Donald Trump has in mind for us all, including immigrants and women. We'll hear excerpts from Donald Trump's State of the Union on the right to abortion, immigration, and foreign policy, as well as rebuttals delivered by Senator Bernie Sanders and Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor in the state of Georgia. And both of them had a lot to say about what Donald Trump did not say. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the relationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Climate justice activists have taken up the call for a Green New Deal. Today, House Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey unveil legislation to achieve its objectives. A joint resolution drafted by the two sets a goal to meet 100% of the power demand in the U.S. through clean, renewable, and zero-emission energy sources, including dramatic increases in wind and solar power. The resolution calls for a 10-year national mobilization that would dramatically expand and upgrade existing renewable energy and deploy new capacity. They call for an upgrade to all existing buildings to achieve maximum energy efficiency. The resolution says the government should work with farmers and ranchers to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions to the maximum feasible extent and build a more sustainable food system. Overhaul transportation, including providing clean and affordable public transportation and investments in zero-emission vehicles. The resolution calls for extensive community and labor consultation and collaboration to ensure vulnerable communities and workers reap the benefits of a Green New Deal. The resolution reaches outside the energy sector to call for high-quality health care for all, affordable, safe, and adequate housing, economic security, and access to clean water and air, and healthy and affordable food and nature. The resolution doesn't include a price tag. Some Republicans say it would cost in the trillions of dollars. Ocasio-Cortez responded the Green New Deal would be paid the same way we paid for the original New Deal, World War II, the bank bailouts, tax cuts for the rich, and decades of war, with public money appropriated by Congress. While 2018 was the fourth warmest year on record, British meteorologists are predicting the next 5 years will be much hotter, maybe even record-breaking. Two U.S. agencies, the U.K. Office and the World Meteorological Organization, each came to the same conclusion. Last year was the fourth warmest on record, behind 2016, 15, and 2017. NASA and NOAA climate scientists said even though 2018 was slightly cooler, that's mostly due to random weather variations. NASA's chief climate scientist Gavin Schmidt appeared on Al Jazeera.
It is alarming. It's not surprising because we've been predicting this for 30 years, and finally it's actually happening. But it is alarming because the things that are driving this, the increases in greenhouse gases, we're still increasing the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere year on year.
The Democratic chair of the House Intelligence Committee announced a broad new investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election and into Trump's foreign financial interests. Adam Schiff announced the move just hours after President Trump's State of the Union warning to Congress against such investigations. Schiff was unbowed.
To investigate any credible allegation that financial interests or other interests are driving the decision-making of the president or anyone in the administration. The American people have a right to know, indeed have a need to know, that their president is acting on their behalf and not for some pecuniary or other reason. That pertains to any credible allegations of leverage by the Russians or the Saudis or anyone else.
Trump immediately shot back, calling the probe harassment, and Schiff a political hack.
He's just a political hack who's trying to build a name for himself, and I think that's fine because that's what they do. But there would be no reason to do that. No other politician has to go through that. It's called presidential harassment. And it's unfortunate, and it really does hurt our country.
The House Intelligence Committee also voted to send the transcripts from the panel's earlier Russia probe to Special Counsel Robert Mueller. The documents include transcripts of interviews with Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., son-in-law and advisor Jared Kushner, his longtime spokeswoman Hope Hicks, and former bodyguard Keith Schiller. A Washington Post report this week revealed that Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren identified herself as an American Indian on a Texas bar registration card in 1986. Warren told reporters she has apologized for claiming Cherokee Native ancestry in the past based on family stories.
This is who I grew up believing with my brothers. This is our family story. And it's all consistent from that point in time. But as I said, it's important to note I'm not a tribal citizen.
Warren said she realizes now that only tribes can determine citizenship or membership.
Those were our news headlines. Now we turn our attention to the trouble Donald Trump has in mind. We'll hear for us all. We'll hear excerpts from his State of the Union address where he discusses attacks on women's right to choose by making untrue statements about women's right to abortion, about immigration and foreign policy. Let's go to those clips right now.
There could be no greater contrast to the beautiful image of a mother holding her infant child than the chilling displays our nation saw in recent days. Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth. These are living, feeling, beautiful babies who will never get the chance to share their love and their dreams with the world. And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia where he stated he would execute a baby after birth to defend the dignity of every person. I am asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit the late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in a mother's womb. Let us work together to build a culture that cherishes innocent life. Now, Republicans and Democrats must join forces again to confront an urgent national crisis. Congress has 10 days left to pass a bill that will fund our government, protect our homeland, and secure our very dangerous southern border. Now is the time for Congress to show the world that America is committed to ending illegal immigration and putting the ruthless coyotes, cartels, drug dealers, and human traffickers out of business. As we speak, large, organized caravans are on the march to the United States. We have just heard that Mexican cities, in order to remove the illegal immigrants from their communities, are getting trucks and buses to bring them up to our country in areas where there is little border protection. I have ordered another 3,750 troops to our southern border to prepare for this tremendous onslaught. This is a moral issue. The lawless state of our southern border is a threat to the safety, security, and financial well-being of all America. We have a moral duty to create an immigration system that protects the lives and jobs of our citizens. This includes our obligation to the millions of immigrants living here today who followed the rules and respected our laws. Legal immigrants enrich our nation and strengthen our society in countless ways. I want people to come into our country in the largest numbers ever, but they have to come in legally. Tonight, I am asking you to defend our very dangerous southern border out of love and devotion to our fellow citizens and to our country. No issue better illustrates the divide between America's working class and America's political class than illegal immigration. Wealthy politicians and donors push for open borders while living their lives behind walls and gates and guards. Meanwhile, working-class Americans are left to pay the price for mass illegal immigration. reduce jobs, lower wages, overburdened schools, hospitals that are so crowded you can't get in, increased crime, and a depleted social safety net. Tolerance for illegal immigration is not compassionate. It is actually very cruel. One in three women is sexually assaulted on the long journey north. Smugglers use migrant children as human pawns to exploit our laws and gain access to our country. Human traffickers and sex traffickers take advantage of the wide open areas between our ports of entry to smuggle thousands of young girls and women into the United States and to sell them into prostitution and modern-day slavery. Tens of thousands of innocent Americans are killed by lethal drugs that cross our border and flood into our cities, including meth, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl. The savage gang, MS-13, now operates in at least 20 different American states, and they almost all come through our southern border. Just yesterday, an MS-13 gang member was taken into custody for a fatal shooting on a subway platform in New York City. We are removing these gang members by the thousands, but until we secure our border, they're going to keep streaming right back in. Year after year, countless Americans are murdered by criminal, illegal aliens. We are now making it clear to China that after years of targeting our industries and stealing our intellectual property, the theft of American jobs and wealth has come to an end. I have great respect for President Xi, and we are now working on a new trade deal with China. I hope you can pass the USMCA into law so that we can bring back our manufacturing jobs in even greater numbers. We have secured, over the last couple of years, more than $100 billion of increase in defense spending from our NATO allies. Decades ago, the United States entered into a treaty with Russia in which we agreed to limit and reduce our missile capability. Russia repeatedly violated its terms. That is why I announced that the United States is officially withdrawing from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Perhaps we can negotiate a different agreement, adding China and others, or perhaps we can't, in which case we will outspend and out-innovate all others. If I had not been elected President of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea. Yeah. Chairman Kim and I will meet again on February 27th and 28th in Vietnam. We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime as we work with our allies to destroy the remnants of ISIS. It is time to give our brave warriors in Syria a warm welcome home. I have also accelerated our negotiations to reach, if possible, a political settlement in Afghanistan. We will be able to reduce our troops' presence and focus on counterterrorism. My administration has acted decisively to confront the world's leading state sponsor of terror, the radical regime in Iran, to ensure this corrupt dictatorship never acquires nuclear weapons. I withdrew the United States from the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. We will not avert our eyes from a regime that chants death to America and threatens genocide against the Jewish people.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We're going to take a short station break. When we return, we'll hear rebuttals to Trump's State of the Union delivered by Stacey Abrams, representing the Democratic side, and Senator Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump's State of the Union speech, which he delivered on Tuesday, February 5th. We'll be right back.
Discredited and abandoned, everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Miss a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. This a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality will remain but a fleeting illusion to be pursued but never attained. Now everywhere is war.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, the late great Bob Marley's War. You can check us out on our website at sotrueradio.org. We're also on SoundCloud, and we want to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners anywhere in upstate New York and internationally. We'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Ireland. If you are on Facebook, you can look for us and like us on Facebook. And on SoundCloud, by the way, just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And on Twitter and Instagram, our handle is at SoTrueRadio. We're now going to return to our coverage and turn our attention to rebuttals delivered by Stacey Abrams, the first black woman to give the rebuttal on the Democratic side. Stacey Abrams, you might recall, ran for governor of Georgia and just lost by a very small percentage. And there were lots of problems actually in that election. So who knows what actually really happened. We're also going to hear the rebuttal from Senator Bernie Sanders, these rebuttals to Trump's State of the Union. Let's go now. First, we'll hear from Stacey Abrams and then from Bernie Sanders.
Good evening, my fellow Americans, and happy Lunar New Year. I'm Stacey Abrams, and I'm honored to join the conversation about the state of our union. Growing up, my family went back and forth between lower middle class and working class. Yet even when they came home weary and bone tired, my parents found a way to show us all who we could be. My librarian mother taught us to love learning. My father, a shipyard worker, put in overtime and extra shifts, and they made sure we volunteered to help others. Later, they both became United Methodist ministers, an expression of the faith that guides us. These were our family values: faith, service, education, and responsibility. Now, we only had one car, so sometimes my dad had to hitchhike and walk long stretches during the 30-mile trip home from the shipyards. One rainy night, my mom got worried. We piled in the car and went out looking for him, and we eventually found my dad making his way along the road, soaked and shivering in his shirt sleeves. When he got in the car, my mom asked if he'd left his coat at work. He explained that he'd given it to a homeless man he'd met on the highway. When we asked why he'd given away his only jacket, my dad turned to us and said, I knew when I left that man, he'd still be alone. But I could give him my coat because I knew you were coming for me. Our power and strength as Americans lives in our hard work and our belief in more. My family understood firsthand that while success is not guaranteed, we live in a nation where opportunity is possible. But we do not succeed alone. In these United States, when times are tough, we can persevere because our friends and neighbors will come for us. Our first responders will come for us. It is this mantra, this uncommon grace of community, that has driven me to become an attorney, a small business owner, a writer, and most recently, the Democratic nominee for governor of Georgia. My reason for running was simple. I love our country and its promise of opportunity for all. And I stand here tonight because I hold fast to my father's credo. Together, we are coming for America, for a better America. Just a few weeks ago, I joined volunteers to distribute meals to furloughed federal workers. They waited in line for a box of food and a sliver of hope since they hadn't received paychecks in weeks. Making livelihoods of our federal workers a pawn for political games is a disgrace. The shutdown was a stunt engineered by the President of the United States, one that defied every tenet of fairness and abandoned not just our people, but our values. For 7 years, I led the Democratic Party in the Georgia House of Representatives. I didn't always agree with the Republican speaker or governor, but I understood that our constituents didn't care about our political parties, they cared about their lives. So when we had to negotiate criminal justice reform or transportation or foster care improvements, the leaders of our state didn't shut down. We came together and we kept our word. It should be no different in our nation's capital. We may come from different sides of the political aisle, but our joint commitment to the ideals of this nation cannot be negotiable. Our most urgent work is to realize Americans' dreams of today and tomorrow, to carve a path to independence and prosperity that can last a lifetime. Children deserve an excellent education from cradle to career. We owe them safe schools and the highest standards, regardless of zip code. Yet this White House responds timidly while first graders practice active shooter drills and the price of higher education grows ever steeper. From now on, our leaders must be willing to tackle gun safety measures and face the crippling effect of educational loans, to support educators and invest what is necessary to unleash the power of America's greatest minds. In Georgia and around the country, people are striving for a middle class where a salary truly equals economic security. But instead, families' hopes are being crushed by Republican leadership that ignores real life or just doesn't understand it. Under the current administration, far too many hardworking Americans are falling behind, living paycheck to paycheck, most without labor unions to protect them from even worse harm. The Republican tax bill rigged the system against working people. Rather than bringing back jobs, plants are closing, layoffs are looming, and wages struggle to keep pace with the actual cost of living. We owe more to the millions of everyday folks who keep our economy running, like truck drivers forced to buy their own rigs, farmers caught in a trade war, small business owners in search of capital, and domestic workers serving without labor protections. Women and men who could thrive if only they had the support and freedom to do so. We know bipartisanship could craft a 21st century immigration plan, but this administration chooses to cage children and tear families apart. Compassionate treatment at the border is not the same as open borders. President Reagan understood this. President Obama understood this. Americans understand this. And Democrats stand ready to effectively secure our ports and borders. But we must all embrace that from agriculture to healthcare to entrepreneurship, America is made stronger by the presence of immigrants, not walls. And rather than suing to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, as Republican attorneys general have, our leaders must protect the progress we've made and commit to expanding health care and lowering costs for everyone. My father has battled prostate cancer for years. To help cover the cost, I found myself sinking deeper into debt, because while you can defer some payments, you can't defer cancer treatment. In this great nation, Americans are skipping blood pressure pills, forced to choose between buying medicine or paying rent. Maternal mortality rates show that mothers, especially Black mothers, risk death to give birth. And in 14 states, including my home state, where a majority want it, our leaders refuse to expand Medicaid, which could save rural hospitals, save economies, and save lives. We can do so much more. Take action on climate change. Defend individual liberties with fair-minded judges. But none of these ambitions are possible without the bedrock guarantee of our right to vote. Let's be clear. Voter suppression is real. From making it harder to register and stay on the rolls, to moving and closing polling places, to rejecting lawful ballots, we can no longer ignore these threats to democracy. While I acknowledge the results of the 2018 election here in Georgia, I did not, and we cannot, accept efforts to undermine our right to vote. That's why I started a nonpartisan organization called Fair Fight to advocate for voting rights. This is the next battle for our democracy, one where all eligible citizens can have their say about the vision we want for our country. We must reject the cynicism that says allowing every eligible vote to be cast and counted is a power grab. Americans understand that these are the values our brave men and women in uniform and our veterans risk their lives to defend. The foundation of our moral leadership around the globe is free and fair elections, where voters pick their leaders, not where politicians pick their voters. In this time of division and crisis, we must come together and stand for and with one another. America has stumbled time and again on its quest towards justice and equality. But with each generation, we have revisited our fundamental truths, and where we falter, we make amends. We fought Jim Crow with the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Yet we continue to confront racism from our past and in our present, which is why we must hold everyone from the highest offices to our own families accountable for racist words and deeds, and call racism what it is, wrong. America achieved a measure of reproductive justice in Roe v. Wade, but we must never forget it is immoral to allow politicians to harm women and families to advance a political agenda. We affirmed marriage equality, and yet the LGBTQ community remains under attack. So, even as I am very disappointed by the president's approach to our problems, I still don't want him to fail. But we need him to tell the truth and to respect his duties and respect the extraordinary diversity that defines America. Our progress has always been found in the refuge in the basic instinct of the American experiment, to do right by our people. And with a renewed commitment to social and economic justice, we will create a stronger America together. Because America wins by fighting for our shared values against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That is who we are. And when we do so, never wavering, the state of our union will always be strong. Thank you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Let me thank all of you for joining me tonight. I know that it is late, and I'm not going to go on for too long. And let me also just congratulate Stacey Abrams for her very, very effective response to President Trump's State of the Union. Now we, I think, all know why she would have been a wonderful governor of Georgia. I know that this will probably not shock you, but I hate to say this, but not everything Donald Trump said tonight was true or accurate. Tonight, when we talk about the economy, tonight and on numerous occasions since he has taken office, President Trump has told the American people that the U.S. economy is the hottest economy anywhere in the world, that it is really booming. Well, that may be true for the members of his Mar-a-Lago Country Club, where the price of admission has doubled to $200,000. For those folks who go to Trump's club and for the wealthiest people in our nation, Trump is right. The economy is really booming. In fact, for many of President Trump's billionaire friends, the truth is they have never, ever had it so good. But for the middle class and for the working families of our country, the truth is that the economy is not so great. Over the last year, for example, real inflation accounted for wages for the average American worker is up by all of 1.2%, just $9.11 a week. In fact, real wages for that same worker, that average American worker, are lower today than they were in 1973. Let me repeat that. The average American worker, after adjusting for inflation, is earning less today than he or she did 46 years ago, despite huge increases in productivity. Sadly, millions of American workers are now forced to work two or three jobs just to pay the bills and to keep their heads above water economically. In America today, and somehow or another, President Trump didn't mention this in his speech, we have more wealth and income inequality than almost any major country on earth. And it is more unfair, more unequal now than at any other time since the Gilded Age of the 1920s. Yes, the economy is great for the three wealthiest people in America who own more wealth than the bottom half of our country, 160 million Americans. Yes, the economy is great for the top 1% who now earn 46% of all new income in our economy. Yes, the economy is great for the top 25 hedge fund managers on Wall Street who made nearly twice as much income last year as all 140,000 kindergarten teachers in our country. 25 hedge fund managers. Yep, the economy is great for the five richest people in America who have seen their wealth go up by over $100 billion since Trump was elected, and for corporations that have announced over $1 trillion in stock buybacks in 2018 alone. Yes, the economy may be great for those folks, but it is absolutely not booming for the nearly 80% of American workers who live paycheck to paycheck, desperately hoping that their child doesn't get sick, praying that their car doesn't break down, or that they don't lose their job. Despite what President Trump says, this is not a hot economy when 43% of households can't afford to pay for housing, food, childcare, healthcare, transportation, and a cell phone without going into debt. That is not a hot economy for ordinary Americans. The economy is not booming when half of Americans 55 years of age and older have no idea how they will live out the last years of their lives with dignity because they have no retirement savings. And that includes, unbelievably, 20% of seniors trying to survive on incomes of less than $14,000 a year. And I just don't know how anybody, certainly not a senior citizen, survives on $14,000 a year. This is not the strongest economy we have ever had, according to Trump. when hundreds of thousands of young people are unable to go to college because they can't afford it, and millions more are struggling with outrageous levels of student debt, when over 34 million Americans have no health insurance, when one out of five of our people cannot afford the medicine prescribed to them by their doctors, and when over 40 million people in our country are living in poverty. This is not an economy we should be proud of when we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the developed world, and when life expectancy in the United States has actually gone down for the third year in a row. And as we speak tonight, let us not forget that in America, millions of our people are working for starvation wages, $8 an hour, $9 an hour, $10 an hour. And here is the simple truth. Nobody can raise a family or pay the rent or take care of the necessities of life on these poverty wages. But you know what? I didn't hear Donald Trump talk about raising the minimum wage to a living wage at least $15 an hour. Somehow, didn't talk about that. Tonight, President Trump talked about what a great job he has done on trade. But what he forgot to tell you is that the annual trade deficit has gone up by over $100 billion since he became president. And our trade deficit with China and Mexico has gone up by tens of billions of dollars. Meanwhile, since Trump was elected, corporations have shipped 185,000 American jobs overseas. President Trump also talked tonight about the need to rebuild our country's crumbling infrastructure, our roads and our bridges and our water systems and our wastewater plants. And he is absolutely right. It is an absolute disgrace that in the wealthiest nation on earth, we have an infrastructure that is crumbling. But the proposal that he is bringing forth is dead wrong. It is an absurd proposal. Trump would encourage states to sell our nation's highways, our bridges, and other vital infrastructure to Wall Street, to wealthy campaign contributors, even to foreign governments. The reality is that Trump's plan to privatize our nation's infrastructure is an old idea that has never worked and, in fact, never will work. President Trump said tonight, quote, "We are born free and we will stay free," end of quote. Well, I say to President Trump, people are not truly free when they can't afford to go to the doctor when they are sick. People are not truly free when they cannot afford to buy the prescription drugs they desperately need. People are not truly free when they are unable to retire with dignity. People are not truly free when they are exhausted because they are working longer and longer hours for lower wages. People are not truly free when they cannot afford a decent place in which to live. People certainly are not free when they cannot afford to feed their families. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said in 1968, and I quote, "This country has socialism for the rich and rugged individualism for the poor," end quote. What Dr. King said then was true, and it is true today, and it remains absolutely unacceptable. Tonight, Donald Trump, who in less than 2 years in the White House has seen five aides either plead guilty or be convicted of criminal charges, claimed the strength of the economy was dependent on him being free from necessary oversight and investigations into wrongdoing by both his campaign and his administration. The exact opposite is true. America's strength is based on the rule of law and the fact that no one, not even the President of the United States, is above it. Tonight, in terms of crime, Trump talked about a terrible and heinous murder in Reno, Nevada, committed by an undocumented immigrant who happens to be Latino. In fact, as I think many of you will recall, over the last several years, Trump has talked time and time again about crimes committed by undocumented Latino immigrants. His demonization of Latinos is nothing less than racist. It is wrong, and it also happens to be factually inaccurate. Undocumented Latino immigrants commit fewer crimes in the United States than the general public. But I want you to think about something for a moment. Isn't it strange that when we talk about terrible crimes committed in the United States or in the state of Nevada, Donald Trump forgot to mention that in 2017, a white man named Stephen Paddock killed 58 people and wounded 851 in the deadliest shooting in modern American history. That also happened in Nevada. Now, how come Trump didn't mention that? If he is concerned about crime, how come Trump didn't talk about one of the worst mass murders in American history? Needless to say, he also didn't mention the need for common sense gun safety legislation, which would lower the terrible rate of mass shootings in our country. Tonight, Donald Trump repeated some of the most extreme anti-woman attacks coming from the far right. At a time when we see an unprecedented and coordinated attack against a woman's right to choose, it is incredibly important that we fight to make sure that every woman in this country has the right to control her own body. Tonight, Donald Trump correctly talked about the need to address the opioid crisis. Well, President Trump, you don't help people suffering from opioid addiction by writing a budget which calls for a $1 trillion cut to Medicaid. That would be a devastating moment in the fight against opioid addiction. Now, as important as it is to respond to what President Trump said tonight, it is even more important to discuss some of what Trump refused to talk about, which happens to include some of the most important issues facing our country and the entire world. Now, how can a president of the United States give a State of the Union speech and not mention, not one word, about climate change, when the leading scientists of the world tell us that climate change is real, that climate change is caused by human activity, and that climate change is already causing devastating harm in the United States and in much of the world? Further, the scientists tell us that we have a very short 12 years, not a lot of time, in order to transform our energy system away from fossil fuels and into energy efficiency and sustainable energy, if we are going to have a planet that is healthy and habitable for our children and our grandchildren. Somehow or another, Donald Trump just forgot to talk about that. Trump also forgot to discuss the international embarrassment of the United States being the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people as a right. Now, how can he ignore the fact that we spend far more per capita on health care than any other country on earth, while at the same time, tens of millions of our fellow Americans are uninsured or underinsured. Somehow or another, Trump forgot to get to that issue. How can President Trump not discuss the terrible attacks that we are seeing to undermine the fundamentals of American democracy, which includes the disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision that allows billionaires to buy elections? Trump talked a lot about freedom tonight, but somehow or another, he didn't talk about governors' efforts all across this country, governors who are trying to suppress the vote and make it harder for poor people or people of color to vote. You can't talk about freedom in America and ignore the massive amounts of voter suppression taking place, denying people the right to participate in our democracy. Donald Trump talked about the economy, but he forgot to mention the fact that state after state is doing the right thing and is raising the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour. But I didn't hear President Trump say that he would work with me and with other advocates of a living wage to raise the minimum wage at the federal level to $15 an hour. Somehow didn't get into that. How could President Trump not mention the words Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid in his State of the Union speech when he promised over and over again during his campaign, you remember that? That he would not cut these programs. Could it be because his budget proposed massive cuts to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security in direct violation of his campaign pledge? How could Trump not talk about the reality that Russia, through cyber warfare, interfered in our election in 2016, is interfering in democratic elections all over the world, and according to the heads of his own national security agencies, attempted to interfere in the 2018 midterm elections? How can the president say nothing about Yemen, where the humanitarian crisis, where the worst humanitarian crisis in the world is currently taking place, brought on by a Saudi-led war that the United States is supporting? And just yesterday, a CNN report detailed how our Saudi and Emirati allies have been giving U.S.-made weapons to Al-Qaeda-linked fighters in Yemen and have also fallen into the hands of Iranian-backed Houthi rebels. This war is a disaster, which is why the Senate passed a resolution that I sponsored last December, calling on the president to end our support for that terrible war, and why colleagues in both the House and the Senate reintroduced that legislation last week. This is an enormously important foreign policy issue. It speaks to our relationship with a despotic regime in Saudi Arabia. Somehow Trump forgot to mention that. President Trump has stated tonight and over and over and over and over again that building a wall on the Mexican border is a national emergency. In fact, he shut down the government and caused enormous pain and uncertainty for some 800,000 federal employees who were forced to go to work but were not paid, all because of his insistence on that wall. No, President Trump, building a wall is not an emergency. In terms of immigration in this country, what we need to do is not to waste billions of dollars on a wall, but to finally address the need for comprehensive immigration reform, including a path to citizenship for millions of undocumented people. It is inhumane and not what America stands for, that tiny children at the border have been torn apart from their parents. It is disgraceful that 1.8 million young people raised in the United States and who know no other country but the United States have lost their legal protection under the DACA program because of Trump's actions. It is heartbreaking that almost 11 million undocumented people living in this country, the overwhelming majority of whom are hardworking and law-abiding, worry every day about being deported and separated from their loved ones. What a president of the United States is supposed to do, and I think in a certain sense almost all presidents in recent history have understood that, is that when you're president, you bring our people together, whether they're black or white or Latino, whether they're Asian American, Native American, whether they're men or women, whether they're gay or straight. That's what a president is supposed to do. But in an unprecedented way, that is not what this president is doing. In fact, he is trying to divide us up. He is trying to have one group turn against another group. And that is certainly not what this country is supposed to be about. Trump said tonight that we should, quote, govern not as two parties, but as one nation. I agree. But Trump's agenda of providing tax breaks to billionaires while throwing millions of Americans off of health insurance is the exact opposite of what the American people want. If Trump truly wants to govern in a bipartisan manner, let's take a look at what the overwhelming majority of the American people want. In other words, I know this is a radical idea, but I say to the President of the United States, why don't you do what the American people want you to do rather than what wealthy campaign contributors want? Let me give you some examples. A Fox News poll conducted last month shows that 70% of Americans support a tax increase on families making over $10 million. According to Reuters, 70% of the American people, including 52% of Republicans, support Medicare for all. They understand that the current health system is not working, and they want to join every other country on earth in making healthcare a right, not a privilege. Another poll found that 72% of the American people, including 51% of Republicans, want to expand Social Security benefits, make sure that our elderly people can retire in dignity, and do that by increasing taxes on millionaires and billionaires.
We're out of time. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, including assistant producer Ramiro Funes and our engineer, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. And remember to visit our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at So True Radio. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. In the victory of good over evil.